Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Trump 2, The Revenge, to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this rather depressed week is fault as virtue.
Yeah. Beginning of a fairly depressed 4 years.
Maybe.
Four plus, who knows? Who knows whether it'll end in 4 years?
Quite a good Trump 2, The Revenge. This time it's even more personal.
Fault as virtue is when someone kind of disingenuously reframes a flaw in either a situation or in their personality as actually, if you think about it, a positive.
When you come to think of it.
It works for their audience because of cognitive dissonance, basically. Because holding multiple ideas in your head that compete with each other is uncomfortable psychologically. And so if people, let's take Trump as an example, people who like Trump, if they hear negative things about him, those two things, oh, I like him, but I've heard this bad thing, that's uncomfortable. So if you reframe that undesirable thing as actually a good thing, they're like, oh, yeah, it's a plus, actually, now I come to think of it. So
you can hold both of those things,
reduces that cognitive dissonance, makes you feel all happy again.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
Quite easily to do that. So they are prepared to accept any old shit that makes a bad thing actually sound like a good thing.
Yeah, because they haven't got to do the work then.
Yeah,
as well. That's the other thing, isn't it? That certainly when Trump does it, he kind of takes care of the thought process. He said, stick with me, kid. I'll do all the thinking for you.
Absolutely.
But you haven't got to worry. You no longer have to question him.
Yes.
You're freed of that.
Because that's what they want already. Like, they're looking for positive things, positive traits of good things. And so the negative thing, if it can be turned into a good thing, then it fits into the thing they're looking for anyway, the thing they want to believe.
Yeah.
So it's easier to believe. So our first example from Trump is in his first debate with Hillary, where she talked about the fact that he didn't really pay any federal income taxes for quite a while.
Or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets, zero for schools or health.
So she's making quite a good point, I would say, that, you little workers who like him, you have to pay your income taxes.
Yep.
You have to pay your state taxes and your federal income taxes, and those go to pay for public services that you might actually then benefit from. And even if you don't, then other people are paying for the ones you do benefit from as well as you and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But he just gets away with it. He didn't do it. He just couldn't be bothered, basically. And that's not a good thing. But he cuts through all of that with, that makes me smart, because I, you know, I was able to get away with it.
Yes, that was his entire, so everybody says, aha. And in fact, we've heard people say that since. Yeah, he's a smart guy. He worked out a way of not having to pay any tax. And what it does is make you a tax avoider and commit fraud and And we know all that because we've read every single book about him. You know, all of the reframing of the Trump management companies such that, you know, he inherited the skills and the legitimacy to do that from his dad.
So yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's how he made his fortune. That's because his dad gave it to him as a tax dodge.
So
that makes me smart.
Example is when it was pointed out in the Republican primary debate, same mm-hmm. election, 2016 election, yeah. that he was actually pretty corrupt in terms of the money that he gave to politicians and the influence that he bought.
Yeah.
By doing that.
Donald told you for 40 years he's been sitting at that table using his money to buy influence, supporting liberal Democrats like Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, but also supporting the Republican establishment and funding their effort to crush the Tea Party. And now his argument is, after four decades of being part of that influence buying, after Hillary Clinton spending decades being part of that influence selling, that suddenly he will change. But the interesting point is, tonight he hasn't pointed to a single special interest he's willing to take on. He didn't take on Wall Street when he supported the TARP bailout in Wall Street. He won't take on ethanol. And my campaign, by contrast, funded by 1.1 million contributions all over this country.
Thank you, Senator. I want to go to Mr. Trump for a response. $62
at tedcruz.org.
Thank you, Senator.
That's who you got to be accountable to, the people.
Ted was given to PACs. I mean, PACs, you know, these super PACs are a disaster, by the way, folks. Very corrupt. It's going to lead to lots of disasters. But Ted has super PACs, and you have to look at the people that are giving to those super PACs, number one. It's very important to do that. There is total control of the candidates. I know it better than anybody that probably ever lived. And I will tell you this. I know the system far better than anybody else, and I know the system is broken. And I'm the one, because I know it so well, because I was on both sides of it, I was on the other side all my life. And I've always made large contributions. And frankly, I know the system better than anybody else. And I'm the only one up here that's going to be able to fix that system, because that system is wrong.
So basically, he's the poacher turned gamekeeper.
Absolutely, yeah. Because he knows about how all of these
packs
let you get round the law.
Yeah.
He knows where the loopholes are and therefore how to close them up. Not that he did or had ever had any intention to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've seen constant examples of that, because he still does it.
Yeah, and Democrats have campaigned on campaign finance reform on many occasions. He was doing the sloganeering of draining the swamp and stuff like that, and never did anything about campaign finance or super PACs or, you know, money influencing politics. Because if he had, we wouldn't be in a situation where the richest man in the world
is part of
basically
his team.
Bought a quasi government role.
Yeah, it's a quango, isn't it? Exactly.
And I, at no point do I want to be aligned in any way with Ted Cruz.
But. Yes. I know, that was the kind of.
Yeah, that's the worst.
It was sort of that uncanny valley kind of thing, isn't it? He's just going, oh no, it's I'm almost agreeing. He's almost making sense as a human being, but not quite. Yeah.
That's cognitive dissonance for you.
Yeah.
So our third example is from the debate with Hillary again.
Yeah.
And he was asked about the fact that he did all the birtherism stuff and questioned Obama's citizenship.
We're talking about racial healing in this segment. What do you say to Americans?
Well, it was very, I say nothing. I say nothing because I was able to get him to produce it. He should have produced it a long time before. I say nothing. But let me just tell you, when you talk about healing, I think that I've developed very, very good relationships over the last little while with the African-American community. I think you can see that. And I feel that they really wanted me to come to that conclusion. And I think I did a great job and a great service, not only for the country, but even for the president, in getting him to produce his birth certificate.
Secretary Clinton.
So, yeah, it was a service for Obama. Constantly questioning whether he was actually born in Kenya.
Exactly. And the entire black American citizenry kind of go, wondering all this time.
He did a great job.
He did do a good job. it because
they had questions. Admittedly,
yeah. Oh God, yeah.
You know, only questions that he raised and pushed repeatedly.
Yeah,
but the questions were out there, and he got the answer to the questions.
As a consequence, I've heard people say, it was you all along. We've got 4 more years of this.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British politics corner.
The thing is, in British politics, probably because it's an older, it's like hundreds of years older than America, they've learned not to fall into this trap. And so the examples that would have been available, there was no recording devices at the time, so I couldn't find, you know, Henry VIII saying anything. So what I'm trying to say is that the Brits are a little bit more canny about it, unless they are completely tonto and got massive chips on their shoulders and can't bear the fact that they were the ones that brought their own downfall to bear. We're talking about Liz Truss, of course. and so this is Liz Truss and the Truss Kwarteng mini budget. And here is Liz Truss being interviewed by Unheard, and Unheard spelled H-E-R-D, to say we're not along with the herd. We're going to interview people that are slightly outside of the thing and then give them a really softball bloody interview. So anyway, here's a clip of her talking about the mini budget, which brought about her downfall and was an abject failure.
What they really don't like about me is that I challenge the orthodoxy. And, you know, I stand by that. I think I was right to do it. I think if the measures in the mini budget had been in place today, such as allowing fracking, such as not raising corporation tax, such as allowing duty-free shopping, such as abolishing the top tax rate, I think the British economy would be in a better position. And I absolutely stand by that.
And also the Bank of England not having to ensure there wasn't a run on the pound and all the pension funds buying lots of gilt, if that hadn't happened. So basically she's saying, I didn't trash the economy for my un-peer-reviewed by the Office of Budget Responsibility, which makes you think, perhaps this was a budget irresponsibility. In doing that, what I was doing, actually, I was right, because what I was doing was challenging the orthodoxy. So it wasn't about trashing the economy. What she was saying is the orthodoxy of the economy, which is to keep everything stable.
Yeah, the one that's been worked out.
Not lose money.
Through trial and error over hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, and not least put forward by Thatcher, her erstwhile cosplay hero. Yeah, that kind of the monetarist Keynesian market forces thing. Something about the stability of the international markets and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that orthodoxy, I didn't fail. I succeeded in challenging the orthodoxy. She doesn't go on to say, which was the wrong thing to do. She said, oh, and I was right to do that, but not with our mortgage repayments. Thank you very much. Not with our pensions, not with our, you know, inflation rate. Do it on your own time. Do it with your own money. Okay, so example two, another person that thinks they've done no wrong whatsoever, never mind Partygate, look how hard you're working, Boris Johnson, and his number one fan, Nadine Dorries. God, I had to watch a lot of Nadine Dorries. She is the number one apologist for Boris. And in a similar kind of phrased question, what was it that first attracted you to the millionaire Paul Daniels? It's that in the question that she poses is the reframing of Boris's abject failure to read the nation's room. She reframes him as a hero.
Do you think it was wrong of you to focus all your attention on making sure we made the vaccine, we delivered the vaccine, we were one of the first countries to lift restrictions? Or do you think you should have been prowling the corridors of 10 Downing Street in that warren of offices, checking up on 250 employees and asking them what they were doing on the Friday nights with urine checkers?
What I would say is that we all thought what we were doing, or certainly I thought what we were doing, was within the rules. And what we certainly thought was we are working blindingly hard on some massive priorities for the country.
The fact that he's so hesitant in about finding the... She says what he said completely lucidly. You know, she's got it written down, obviously. but it's kind of saying, do you think you were wrong to concentrate on sorting out their thing? He should have just, I mean, it's a very difficult question to answer because it's a bit like, when did you stop beating your
wife?
Yeah,
it's a complex question fallacy built in there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you were wrong to do all the right things, or do you think you should straw man?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because nobody was saying Boris should have been going door to door through Whitehall and the Houses of Parliament to check up and make sure no one was partying. The fact is, he created a system where they were partying with him in rooms where he was drinking champagne during lockdown that he well knew about.
Following on from the fact that, despite him saying, well, we thought we were doing it between the rules, what, you know, within the rules. No, between the rules is right, within the rules. No, you came up with the fucking rules.
He's fucking on screen asking questions in a champagne-fueled quiz.
And then somebody afterwards says, what do we say? Do we tell him it's cheese and wine? Who then had to get ousted because she'd given the game away.
Yeah. Then someone else going, don't film this.
Yeah, exactly. And there are so many apologists that all point to, you know, never mind the Partygate, never mind the 232,000 people that lost their lives because we dithered and fucked about. Let's talk about the AstraZeneca, and then let's talk about the fact that we did Brexit, which meant we could do AstraZeneca, which had nothing to do with Brexit. And they keep doing that and keep punting the same lies. And the nice thing about that interview, it's just about the time of the Sue Gray report going on, so he's about to be voted off, and he looks the scruffiest he's ever done, you know, apart from his artfully tousled hair, which you can see him doing as he's coming down the corridor to go on. He's got a half a bit of beard where he's forgot to shave himself, and there's a little bit sticking out just under his nose. He looks like he's woken up in a ditch, probably has, on the way back from a party. Okay, anyway, so example three, this was the one that kind of caught my eye first of all before I had to go off into the rabbit hole of Dean Doris. No, that doesn't sound right. Every time there's an election or a by-election, people come on to the airwaves representing the party that has lost, and they always, without fail, reframe that loss as some kind of a win. And this example is Angela Rayner, who was the then deputy shadow leader, now deputy leader. And there were three by-elections, and each of the parties won one of them. This was in July, following Boris's resignation. And his constituency, Boris's constituency of Uxbridge and South Ruislip, was held by the Tories, following on from the confused ultra-low emissions zone, exclusion zone, that Sadiq Khan was going to extend out to Uxbridge, out to West London. And he's the Labour mayor and the Labour candidate in Uxbridge and South Ruislip. It was for the ULEZ, and then got wind of the fact that nobody liked it, and then was against the ULEZ. So Starmer was against the ULEZ. So consequently, they didn't win the seat. However, this is what Angela said.
Well, it's clear that, you know, ULEZ was an issue on the door. But we, you know, this was a safe Tory seat that in 1997, with our landslide victory, we didn't gain it then. So I think it's a bigger pitch than that. We ran the Tories very close, within 500 votes.
So it was a win. They got them down to 500 votes, which is pretty good, because the guy that did win got less, or just about half as many votes as Johnson had got in 2019. So this is 2023. Johnson had got 26,000 odd, and Steve Tuckwell got 13,000 odd, even though the electorate only dropped from 75,000 to 69,000. So they lost a lot of seats. This was Boris's constituency. He was a disgraced PM. He'd been recommended to be suspended for 90 days, which would have forced a re-election in his seat, or a recall in his seat, but he chose to resign. Labour should have just won it. But
They did the
confused thing where they kind of thought, well, we ought to agree with the ULEZ thing, and then they been regretting it ever since. And in August, after this election in July, Sadiq Khan did extend the ULEZ. And in 2024, Labour won the seat with 500 anyway. Yeah. So it kind of it was a wasted opportunity, but it, you know, never let a failure fail to be a win, I guess. Yeah. And finally, this one is just brilliant. So this was the Tory party members at the Tory party conference in October 2023 in Manchester. So not long after you would have been there for QED.
Right, yeah.
So here is somebody interviewing a Tory party member about whether Sunak is a good leader and why.
Rishi Sunak is the perfect man for the job because he himself is an entrepreneur, a billionaire who has no need to do the job, but he has chosen to do the job. And for that, we are very grateful for him. And his wife, she is such an amazing person. They are so wealthy and they live such a normal life, which makes them a credit to humanity.
There's just no words after that, are there? That's just brilliant.
It's great because he's so incredibly rich.
Multi-millionaire Sunak, not out of touch at all.
Yeah.
He's a credit to humanity.
Wow.
Yeah. When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but you're not what we need, and we feel so tired but there's no release, stuck with you focus, and the lies come streaming out your face. When you lose something, you get replaced. Could kill us all. Lies will.
There, of course, with Fix You. And in The Fallacy of the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from Futurama.
Yay.
This is an episode that plays a little bit on COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in fact, this is kind of saying that COVID is still going in the year 3000 or whatever.
Right.
But they've got a vaccine. And
right.
So Professor Farnsworth and his arch rival are both giving a press conference about their differing vaccines and the benefits or potential side effects of them.
Dr. Wernstrom, what do you say to reports your vaccine has the side effect of magnetism?
That's a feature, not a bug.
Oh, cool.
Linda, Morbo and Linda, according to an anonymous internet post, your anti-anger vaccine causes sterility. Care to comment?
The sterility is essential. Studies show that kids are what make people angriest. Everyone hates kids.
Yeah, so
yeah, it's a feature, not a bug. Yeah.
Yeah, so the strand of the virus that they are offering a vaccine for, the kind of main feature of it is that it makes people angry. So it's like a rage virus.
Right.
So his argument is that the fact that it also makes you sterile.
It's sterile.
It's a plus because, you know, kids.
Yeah.
What makes you angrier than kids?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So benefit. We'll get rid of them. No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our second example comes from Annie Hall.
Ah.
And this is a scene in which Alvy is worried that Annie wants to move in with him and is thinking of giving up her apartment.
What do you mean? You're not going to give up your own apartment, are you?
Of course.
Yeah, but why?
Well, I mean, I'm moving in with you. That's why.
Yeah, but you got a nice apartment.
I have a tiny apartment.
I know it's small.
That's right. It's got bad plumbing and bugs.
All right, granted, it has bad plumbing and bugs, but you say that like it's a negative thing. You know, bugs are, entomology is a rapidly growing field.
you say that like that's a bad thing.
The bugs are clearly not a negative. What are you talking about?
No.
Entomology is a rapidly growing field. Why would you see this as a negative thing? So, and our final example.
It is a tiny apartment, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our final example comes from Better Call Saul.
Aha!
And this is very early on in the series where Saul has found the Kettlemans, the rich couple who have absconded with, I think, over $1.5 million. And they try and get him to take a bribe.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he tries to get them to become his clients.
I know that HHM is shiny and it's slick and it's chock full of lawyers. And compared to them, I'm like a kiddie lemonade stand trying to compete with Walmart. But here's the thing. What are you going to get from me that you're not going to get from those other guys? Passion. Commitment. Ask yourself this. Who found you? I don't see Howard Hamlin ruining his $300 Gucci loafers out here. If you're with me, you're my number one client, morning, noon, or night. You call me, I'm there. I would be singularly devoted to you.
So he's trying to sell. I mean, he's a con man, as it goes. And so, kind of getting people. It's pretty early on, you figure that out. convincing people to do what he wants is one of his main skills. But what he's trying to do is sell people who have already very high-scale lawyers and can certainly afford to pay the very high-scale lawyers.
Yeah.
He's trying to get them to leave them and come to him by saying that you know, what you get, even though I'm just one guy and I'm nothing compared to that firm, get passion. You get, like, focus. You'll be my main client. And, he's trying to turn what's clearly a negative...
Yeah,
because he's far less likely to have sway within the court system and kind of win cases.
But also, he's kind of trying to sell them on their failure insofar as he's caught them.
He's caught
up with them
as
a success on their part that they've discovered him, who are passionate, committed, you know, any time of the day or night.
And they point out that he's the kind of lawyer that guilty people hire. So even though they are absolutely guilty people,
So
they don't want to, they don't want that to be the look if they were to go with him as their lawyer. So
excellent. That's why it's such a brilliant series, because it's nuanced at every turn.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, the appearance of sometimes losing in the game, and yes, I admit it, it sometimes appears that way, is actually a way to ensure that Jim doesn't feel outclassed and outgunned every time. See, I'm actually doing a good thing, a great thing, guaranteeing Jim comes back time after time, thinking he's able to win. It's a special service I'm providing. You ought to be thanking me.
Yeah, you're being selfless and generous, aren't you?
Altruistic. And I'm not losing. I'm taking one for the team.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
These examples this week come from a press conference that Trump gave at Mar-a-Lago, pretty much as we were recording our last episode, actually. And as with so many Trump press conferences, it didn't really have a point. There wasn't like a thing. Normally, when people have a press conference, it's because a thing has happened.
They're kind of,
and they are and they announcing want to talk about the thing.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
commenting on the thing.
Yeah.
He just was talking.
There.
Yeah.
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 People are here. He's like, they come here to see me.
It's Thursday. Let's have a press conference. Them. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. So he rambled basically about all kinds of different shit.
Yeah.
This was incidentally the press conference where he possibly on the spur of the moment decided to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Right.
Which he's now carried through, and as it is one of the executive orders that he's signing today.
Yeah. Because that's what everybody needed. Sure. You know, we want
that'll fix jobs.
We want, you know, cheap healthcare. Yeah. We want lower inflation.
Yeah.
But no, actually, come to think of it, what we need to do is rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, because that's been bugging me ever since the day I was born.
Understandable.
Yeah.
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 So, he said, statement number one, we will settle the horrible war in Ukraine very quickly. We have to do it, and I will get it done in a very short period of time. Frankly, it should never have happened. It would never have happened if I was your president. People are being shot and really killed in numbers nobody's ever seen. Even a mediocre deal maker could have stopped it, and the time to stop it was before it got started. I spoke to Vladimir Putin. I told him very strongly not to even think about doing anything, and he didn't do it until he saw how weak America was under Sleepy Joe.
Hmm. Even a mediocre deal could have stopped, deal maker could have stopped it. Yeah.
And I am that mediocre deal maker. And I
You can see him standing there with his arms akimbo, big M on his chest as his tie flaps in the wind. Yeah. Okay.
So, statement number two. I don't know what it is with electric. This guy loves electric. We're going to be ending the electric car mandate quickly, by the way. This guy loves electric, and we don't have enough electricity, and then we have AI where we need more, and he wants everybody to have an electric heater instead of a gas heater. Gas heater is much less expensive. The heat is much better. It's a much better heat. As the expression goes, you don't itch. Does anybody have a heater where you go and you scratch, and that's what they want you to have?
What? It's one of those,
you know, the expression
you don't itch. Right, it's because the heat is better. It's a non-itchy heat.
Better heat.
Oh, okay, because as we all know, electric heating is it? I guess it contains some of the letters in the word itch. Electric. This is the nearest I can get there. Okay, the guy loves electric, and we don't have enough. And then we have AI where we need more.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Statement number three.
Right.
This is in response to Biden protected 625 million acres of offshore drilling.
Oh, okay.
Basically banned.
It's like the Antarctic, Arctic protected thing.
Trump says, the 625 million acres, people can't realise, that's like the whole ocean.
Yeah.
Take an acre, you know, an acre. You have a house on a half an acre, or a quarter of an acre, or an acre. If you have an acre, you have a big deal. Now you multiply that by 625 million acres, it's like, feels like the whole ocean. And that's our strength. You know, people can say we manufacture. We don't manufacture. Thing is, we have oil and gas, more than anybody in the world, and we're going to have more of it too.
Okay, right. What the hell? So you have a house on half an acre, or a quarter, or an acre. And then you multiply that by 60. Imagine that. You multiply that by 60 million, and that feels like the whole ocean. What? So he's helped us out there by saying, okay, imagine your house on half an acre. That's quite big, yeah? And now imagine that house, and that's an ocean.
Just multiply that by 625 million.
Yeah, and it feels like...
That's how you imagine big things, isn't it? Yeah. You imagine a small thing, but millions of them, hundreds of millions of them.
Hundreds of millions of them. Just ramp it up like that. When he says people can't realise, he's actually saying, I've got no idea how big that is. Part of his appeal is that he's like a doofus everyman. He's the stupid one that is asking stupid questions, and people think, oh yeah, they are the kind of, oh look at him, the doofus, or they go, yeah, that guy's just like me.
Yeah.
He's got no I've got no idea either. So I'm with him. Okay, right. Yeah, I forgot for a minute what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, one of them.
Right.
One of them is fake. The other two are
one of them is fake. Oh, my God. I can't believe that two of them are real. That's the truth of the matter, that two of them are real. Never mind which one's fake. Two of them, horrifyingly, he actually said. Okay, well, I want the 65 million one to be true, but okay. So we've got one. It's got two of them with numbers, insofar as people are being shot and really killed in numbers. See, I'm beginning to suspect the mediocre deal maker, because that popped out for me, might be a gym-sized joke, because it is a very good joke. And then strongly and weak. Would he do that? Okay, all right. Meanwhile, back at the heat's much better. It's a much better heat. As the expression goes, well, that might be a bit of a giveaway as well, because as we know, you can. He just says, as the old saying goes, and then puts in a saying he's just made up. So that might be a tell. Does anybody have a heater where you go and scratch, and that's what they want you to have? Nobody has a heater where you go and scratch. There's something nagging me about the Ukraine thing. I can remember the invasion happening, and I was driving down a motorway, but it was the same motorway that I heard about the news of Boris. So I suspect that is under Biden. No, I think that's before Biden. Okay. So, right, on that dodgy self-history thing, I'm going to say with decisive boldness that number one is the one you made up.
Okay. So have the other two, which are you more convinced by?
Well, convinced is a very strong word. I think I'm more amused by the number three, 625 million acres. Whether he said it, I suspect he did. It might be my cognitive bias. I just want him to have said it.
Okay. And
so I think, yeah.
Number three is real.
The 625 million acres. People can't realize it's like the whole ocean. Take an acre. You know, an acre, you have a house on a half an acre, on a quarter of an acre, or an acre. If you have an acre, you have a big deal. Now you multiply that by 625 million acres. It's like, feels like the whole ocean. And that's our strength, you know. People can say we manufacture, we don't manufacture. The thing we have oil and gas more than anybody in the world. And we're going to have more of it, too.
It sounds like Pinocchio realizing he's a real boy. He's just absolutely in awe of the size of the ocean.
Yeah, he does not know how big things are.
No.
The whole ocean. Just for the record.
Yeah, more than that.
Is 89 billion acres.
There you go. Yeah.
So he's only off by a factor of about 140.
Mm-hmm.
It's much less than 1% of the whole ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, probably the Gulf of America is about that big. It's not the whole ocean. Yeah,
There's a lot of ocean out there.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Famously.
If you're just protecting the waters, it's quite big. It's... You know, proportionally, there's more of that than there is the dry stuff.
So, you also think number two is real?
I do, yes. But I kind of don't want it to be, because that'll be awful.
Well, I'm afraid.
No.
Number two is real.
I don't know what it is with electric. This guy loves electric. We're going to be ending the electric car mandate quickly, by the way. This guy loves electric. And we don't have enough electricity. And then we have AI where we need more. And he wants everybody to have an electric heater instead of a gas heater. Gas heater is much less expensive. The heat is much better. It's a much better heat. As the expression goes, you don't itch. Does anybody have a heater where you go and you're scratching? And that's what they want you to have.
You know the expression. You know, it's that famous advertising slogan for gas heaters.
For gas heaters.
You don't itch?
Yeah. Yeah, don't itch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Buy gas. Oh, man. This guy,
everyone's saying it.
Everywhere.
It's sweeping the nations.
Yeah. Everyone's saying in that failed advertising firm Trump adverts. Oh, no. What's Musk going to think about him ending the electric car mandate?
Yeah, that's why this relationship can't last.
No, because he's just going to go, yeah, we're going to do away with that. Yeah. Either that or he's not going to fulfill that.
Well, I mean, I think he'll be saved slightly by the fact that there is no electric car mandate.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Not a real thing. That's a thing he's made up. So,
right.
So it's one of those things where you make up a problem and then you say you're going to solve the problem you made up.
Yeah.
And then when it doesn't happen, you can say, I solved it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Sunak and his I've saved you from 7 recycling bins thing or tax on meat.
Yeah.
None of which existed.
Problems you make up are way easier to solve than real world
problems.
Way easier,
as
it turns out.
And you can do it really quickly, can't you? Yeah. They cost almost nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a millionaire, Sunak would know that. And Trump being a millionaire, he must be a gift to humanity.
Absolutely. So we have a few social contestants.
Right.
On Discord. Andrew says, in honour of his second term, I'm saying number 2 is fake.
Right. Right.
And Steve Bickle says, I'm pretty sure I've heard number 1. I'm going with number 3 being fake, just a coin flip.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. On Facebook,
cool.
Christine says, number 1 is uncharacteristically coherent, so I think Jim has slipped that one in to trick us. Number 2, who itches in front of the heater? That's got to be true. Even Jim wouldn't think that one up.
Yeah, there is
So that leaves number 3 as fake. So she was saying number 1 is so coherent, I've included it as an uncharacteristically coherent true one.
Okay, So therefore number 3, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
So on Patreon, Anders says, I have no idea, so I'll do the same thing I always do when some electronic device asks for a passcode. I guess we'll try 3 then. And that, my friends, is how you rise to legend for about 1 in 1,000 people you encounter. 3 is the one you made up. So Kaz says, so as of yesterday, 4 more years of the ranting of Dementia Don, so I'm strapping myself in and considering day drinking. Fairly sure I've heard something like number 2, electric heaters and the like. And number 1 has some familiar phrasing but could be a gym trick. Mm-hmm. And number 3, what the ever-loving fuck is that? I want to hear him say that, so I'm going with number 1 is fake news.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yes, it's much of the same reasoning where you just think, what the loving fuck is that? Yes. Yeah, please let be true.
Will M says, number 1 has to be fake, as I think I've heard him say the other 2 or some variant of them. Christ, he's an idiot. I'm dumbfounded as how truly insane the GQP has become and how much more crazy we have in store for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott says, oh, wow, that greedy, fetid turd always manages to sound so ill-informed. Number 1 has a few too many completish sentences. 2 has the mandatory misuse of adjectives, in this case, electric what? And I think I heard him say something about his fascination with acres, so I'll choose number 1 as fake.
Okay.
Finally, Richard says, I like 1 and 2 for the sheer hypocrisy of what Trump says about people behind their backs versus to their face. Putin is a war criminal versus, ooh, hello, Vladimir, you look so handsome and strong. Or electric cars are a joke versus, you're a genius, Elon, and I love you.
Yeah.
I have to go for 3 as fake news because even those simple maths seem like a stretch for the new Lorax of the United States of America.
Oh, yeah. Immediately the image flashed into my mind. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, somebody who said, number 1, I'm sure I've heard him say it. You say, that's when you hear that, you kind of know that you've nailed it. Yeah. Well, I think it wasn't so much the coherence because it was studiedly incoherent, but for me, it was the mediocre deal maker.
Yeah.
Even a mediocre deal maker could have stopped it. And I'm a mediocre deal maker. Yeah.
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 Well,
which is, it's a bit too self-aware for him. I think that was probably what it is.
Unfortunately, that means you did catch me out that time. So,
yay. Don't look upon it as a failure. It's a success. It's a success insofar as, you know, it keeps you coming back for more.
Uh-huh.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Day One is Not a Logical Fallacy, because, I mean, the counter starts again today.
Yeah.
We're recording this mere hours after Trump was inaugurated for the second time.
Yeah. And the news coverage of it was saying, oh, it's terribly quiet and it's all very civilized and nobody's saying that he's a dangerous fucking narcissist. And
we're all,
you know, pawns in his stupid game. Thankfully, it is a stupid game because he is a narcissist, and all of the things he said he was going to do day one, I suspect many of them have been watered down.
Well, here's the thing.
Somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, as we're recording this only 6-ish hours after he was, after his inauguration.
Yeah.
So it would be a little unfair to judge him based on how he has done on day one compared to how he claimed he would do.
Right.
But never let it be said that we're
not
fair.
Above that. Yeah.
So
never bothered us
so
before.
We thought we'd have a look at some of the things that he said he would do on day one, some of the things he promised.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he has taken steps towards doing some of those things, even in the last few hours, albeit most of them are meaningless and pointless and unconstitutional. And if potentially challenged in court, probably make it up to the Supreme Court where they will say, yeah, that's fine. The first thing on the list is that he said he would begin on day one a mass deportation program. To get rid of all of the criminal illegal aliens in the US.
Yeah.
And I mean, this was walked back just a couple of days ago by Tom Homan, the incoming border czar, because it was announced a couple of days before that, or it leaked, that they were going to start in Chicago. That was where they were going to kind of focus on day one, their beginnings. It's like as soon as Trump signed the executive order, making this a thing, they were going to start doing ICE raids in Chicago.
Yeah.
And but apparently, the fact that people knew it was coming already was fine, but the fact that they knew it was going to be Chicago-focused means, according to Tom Homan, they were like, well, then, like, fuck you, we're not doing it then, in that case.
Yeah.
Because now everyone knows, there's no point.
Yeah.
It was only going to be fun if it was a surprise. So...
Yeah. What? So now that you all know what we were going to do, we're not going to do it now because you know. And that's, yeah.
So maybe. Yeah,
that's spoil it.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So maybe that's a double bluff and they're still going to do it. But they're like, no, don't worry, all Chicago people. Continue to go and do your jobs in restaurants and things, because we're not planning on raiding any places on the Magnificent Mile or anything like that at all. No.
No. I don't know that they're intelligent enough to do that. I don't know why. I've just got the feeling. See, I think with most – I was having a conversation today, I think, with somebody about how Trump got in, and – my thought was that he didn't unite the vote, the non-Democrat vote. He didn't unite it in that they were all kind of anti-Democrats, but they were all pro-Trump, but they weren't all pro each other.
Yeah,
because he promised everything to everyone, to every splinter group. He will say, "Yes,
literally exclusive
I'll do that for you."
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now they're going to, and he doesn't give a shit about that stuff. He's all about getting into power because he didn't want to go to jail.
Yeah.
So he would say anything to anybody to make it possible for them to vote for him and deal with their cognitive dissonance. So he'd say, oh, yeah, you want me to do that? Yeah, of course I'll do that. You want me to do that? Of course I'll do that. He's done that his entire life. So it's like Boris. He doesn't know how not to lie. To him, he's not lying. He's just appeasing everybody. He will just do what the fuck he likes in order to be liked by people.
Yeah.
You know, if the applause stops, he dies. So that's the, he will promise everything to everybody. So all of these things that he said he'd do on day one, many of them, as you say, are mutually exclusive or impossible to do. But the fact that he can promise to do the impossible makes him a superhero and a superman and somebody you ought to vote for, because he's going to bring about this stuff. And, of course, if it isn't brought about, he can blame the system.
I did my best to, and they stopped me. The deep state, probably.
Yeah.
Stopped me. Yeah. I mean, and also one of the other reasons he's not going to be able to do a lot of the things that he claims is because the problems are invented problems. Like he wants to get rid of millions of criminal aliens from the US, but there's actually only about 500,000undocumented people who have a criminal record. So that's going to be tricky to get rid of. Four times as many as exist. So, the next thing is ending birthright citizenship. This is another thing he said he would do on day one. And he has, I believe, either already signed an executive order to do that or has it in his pile of 200 plus executive orders ready to sign. He is, I think, currently at the Capital One Arena in DC signing a pile of executive orders in front of the crowd.
Of course he is.
I should say, the part of the reason people are in the Capital One Arena is to watch the inauguration on big screens, because they couldn't show up to the Capitol to watch it because he wussed out like a little pussy and decided to move the whole thing inside because it was a bit chilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a similar temperature to Kennedy's inauguration, which he did not. He didn't even wear an overcoat when he took the oath of office. It was not that much colder than Obama's first inauguration, where 2 million people showed up and waited outside on the mall.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a fuck of a lot warmer than some of Trump's rallies, where he has had people standing for hours. There was one where it was -17 Fahrenheit.
Whoa!
Where people waited in the cold for like 4 hours to get in to see him. Whoa. He wasn't bothered about that at all, but he claims that he did, you know, he didn't want to get people ill or anything, so he had to move it inside.
That's right, yeah.
There's a possibility that the reason for moving it inside was more crowd size anxiety based.
Yeah, well, that was my thought,
Because he already had a significantly smaller crowd than Obama in his first inauguration, despite what Sean Spicer yelled on TV the next day. Obama's first inauguration, 2009, the hotel vacancy rate in DC was 2.8%. And a couple of days before the Trump inauguration, hotel vacancy rate in DC was 25% for inauguration day. So it seems like not that many people were traveling to DC to attend. And those that did, many of whom repeatedly tweeted that they couldn't afford eggs in November, but somehow managed to find thousands of dollars to make it across country to get to DC to stay there for several days and spent all that money, made it to DC, and then he was like, nah, fuck you, I'm gonna do it inside. So they didn't actually get to see it
eggs
in person, but they did already have plans to have the Capital One Arena as an alternative venue for people to see the inauguration on a big screen. And so some people, less than half of the number of people who could have attended if it was outside, did get to do that. And he has visited that venue to do a little bit of a kind of victory rally speech and signed some executive orders, like on stage at the dais in right. front of his adoring fans.
On his little Fisher Price, my first little desk. Yeah, yeah.
So it is possible that one of those that he's signing at the moment is the ending birthright citizenship thing. The thing about that
kind of
is...
ironic, really, because his parents were...
Yeah. Yeah.
Immigrants.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There is that. There's also the fact that that's the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, and you can't just executive order away a constitutional amendment. Yeah. That's not a thing.
Believe me, he wants to abolish the 14th Amendment.
You need not even just a kind of simple majority in Congress to do that. So it's not like the Republicans can agree to do his bidding.
Yeah.
You have to have like a supermajority. I think I'm right in saying it's 2/3 of one house and 3/4 of the other have to vote in favour of amending the Constitution. So that means nothing if he signs that executive order. It doesn't change anything.
No.
Also, how the fuck would you figure out citizenship if not by birth? Like, how are they going to do it then? There's no apparent plan for that.
You could buy a Trump citizenship.
Oh yeah, yeah. It'll be anyone who owns a Trump NFT gets to be a gets to be a citizen.
Well, it's a bit like the company that owns the war in Catch-22. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it's that. Yeah, you can buy the company citizenship. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. So he has various plans for ending the border, Biden-era border policies. So he wants to basically close down the border completely, reinstate his remain in Mexico policy, get rid of catch and release. And the thing he has already, I think, signed the executive order to do is to close down an app called CBP1, which is an app that is used for asylum seekers and refugees to make appointments within the asylum system.
Right.
It's a system that puts people into a queue to talk with the people who decide whether they get into the country as potential, you know, as legal migrants.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so he has stopped that, which some people say will result in a massive increase in illegal border crossings, because now there isn't a way to do it.
Well, it's a bit like the kind of thing that justified the Rwanda policy was that there are all of these illegal immigrants and, you know, they should be coming in via legal routes. Okay, what are the legal routes? And they shut them all down. So, you know, Priti Patel shut them down, Braverman shut them down, Jenrick shut them down. And yes, there are no. So by definition, if you do away with all the legal routes, then people who come in aren't doing it legally.
Yeah. So they've shut down.
They can all be deported.
They've shut down the app. They've cancelled appointments that people already had, which again, sometimes might have been months in advance.
Mm.
It allows at the moment, or allowed until now, 1,450 migrants a day to seek asylum.
Wow.
Or at least to start that process, to make appointments, to apply. Yeah. So that's now not able to happen. And it's already been challenged in court by the ACLU. So I guess we'll see what will happen with that.
It does occur to me that actually if they do away with the citizenship thing as a reason for deporting immigrants deporting mass deportations, how many people are going to be left in America? Maybe the Native Americans?
I mean,
isn't that the definition? There are non-Native Americans. All of the people who aren't the First Nation Native Americans, the people who were there when all the Americans arrived, the Pilgrim Fathers, Founding Fathers, when they arrived, there were people already there who were the First Nation Native
Americans.
Everybody else is non-Native, so they should just get rid of all of them.
Yeah. So if they...
where does it stop?
Where they say they're focusing on undocumented people with criminal records, if they were to expand that, as they have said that they will, to all undocumented people, because their argument is that by coming in across the border illegally, they have committed a crime. Therefore, they are criminal aliens. That doesn't necessarily count people who've overstayed visas and things like that, but which is not a criminal offence, it's a civil offence, I believe. But anyway, that's beside the point. If they were to do that, then generally farmers in the Midwest say, yeah, literally America will run out of food in like 3 days if you get rid of undocumented people. You the country will not have food.
Exactly, because just like in England, you know, white Americans, white British people don't want to work in the fields, picking fruit, working on farms. They don't want to do that. They think it's beneath them. They think somebody else should be doing that.
But even if, even if they were prepared to, which in many cases they're not, that's not how the system works. So, and you can't change the system within a couple of days. It's not a thing that happens. It would need to be done in a gradual way where those kinds of jobs are valued more and paid more in a way that means that they're then advertised to different people and the system has to be changed. You can't just remove a section of society that does an important role in society and then go, we'll just get by without them. That doesn't work. It's not possible. So if they were able to achieve their goal, it would fuck everything up immeasurably and probably irrevocably. And it's not a thing you can do.
Yeah, we tried it. Take it from us, it didn't work. Brexit was all about trying to do that, and it means that there's a shortage of food. We had a summer where we had no salad. And that, it's just institutional racism. It's just racism writ large in order to get votes by lying. I've realized it now. It's just dawned on me. Okay. Yeah. What else is he?
The next thing is January 6th defendants.
Yeah. Yeah. All of those people that didn't turn up at this point, you know, so in January 6th this year passed with very little.
Well, yeah, of course it did, yeah.
Anything. People just read stuff out and that was it. There was no mass hordes of.
No, there was.
Of I think, self-confessed Trump supporters.
Yeah, 2 or 3 days ago, there was a march in DC, like an anti-Trump march, a completely, utterly peaceful march through DC saying down with this sort of thing.
Yep. And it's only peaceful because Biden's in power. If Trump was in power, there would have been tear gas and he would have waded through and held some sort of book upside down out of some sort of building. Uh-huh.
So January 6th this year was uneventful.
Passed with that incident.
But the other one, that was a bit of an issue. And there have been more than 1,580 defendants charged after January 6th, more than 1,270 convicted, of whom more than 700 either didn't get a custodial sentence at all or got a short one and have done with it. So if he does pardon them, that won't really make any difference at all. But there are some who are still in prison, most of whom, the ones who are still in prison, who got longer sentences or took longer to track down, tend to be the ones who did commit violence. And he has at least suggested that it would be the non-violent ones that he would pardon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, so chances are it won't make a great deal of difference.
Jail time.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So it's just a thing. It's just
that is going to be an executive order, and it isn't one that has at the moment, as we record, been signed. So we don't know the details of it. It may be it's in that list that he's going through at the moment, and we'll find out soon what will be the outcome, and if he does actually differentiate. You know, it may be that he's had someone go through and make a list for him. That will do that, you know, rather than I don't think he'll sign an EO that just says January 6th defendants who weren't violent or something like that. I think it'll delineate them by name, probably. Like, I mean, Biden just pardoned, well, he's done several pardons today.
Yeah.
He pardoned, he gave preemptive pardons to some people who the new Trump administration has promised to target, people like Fauci, the January 6th committee members, his family members, Biden's family members, to stop them from being attacked in kind of partisan lawsuits and things like that. But also the other day he pardoned, I think, 2,500 nonviolent drug offenders who had either excessive sentences or in many cases are in states where it is now legal to possess the drugs that they possessed, but they were convicted before that was that law was made. And so those would have been cases that had been gone through by staff members and were named people that were like, this case and this case and this case, not just a general blanket pardon for a group of people. So I suspect that's how the January 6th defendant thing would have been done, and they would have gone through the individual details of each case, probably.
Yeah.
I hope that's how it would have been done.
But he will dress it up to say that, yes, I pardon those because it was injustice and blah, 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 blah.
But what I'm saying is I think that actually it's quite likely if they have gone through that process and they aren't determined to just pardon everyone, that there probably won't be very many people who it will have any impact on.
Because they've done their time.
Yeah, they're either already out or they didn't go in. Or they are in there because they did a bad thing and they're not getting pardoned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. This is one of the many fun things we get to learn this year.
We wait with bated breath. No, we kind of wait with, oh, for fuck's sake, kind of stuff. I know.
Yeah.
Many fun things. Yeah.
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 So, one thing he vowed to do on day one is end the war in Ukraine.
If not before.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That was always a little bit ambitious.
Yeah.
And indeed has been walked back significantly by both him and incoming people. I think.
Who knows stuff.
I think one of his incoming generals said something like, I think it was Keith Kellogg, said, let's aim for 100 days. And I think even Trump said, I'm hoping within the first 6 months, like a few days ago.
Well,
so they've walked that back quite significantly from day one to when we get around to it.
To way off down there.
Yeah.
Given that Putin's involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You kind of can't go, we're going to end the war in Ukraine. And I want to, and Putin, I love you.
Yeah. I'm going to be a bit busy on inauguration day for all the bootlicking that's going to be required. So.
Yeah. So my tongue won't work probably to actually say those things. Yeah. Oy, oy.
Yeah.
So, and then tariffs. He's got to do tariffs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's going to do
so
that.
Much
That's
about that.
Pretty much his main campaign thing was he's putting tariffs on Mexico, Canada and China. And other things like that. So that's one he was absolutely going to do on day one. That's not even among his list of executive orders that he has. He did a memo about it, or his people put out a memo about it, which was basically requiring his incoming departments to look into trade practices from those countries. Doesn't even mention tariffs on the
tariffs
in the
at
memo.
All. Just trade.
Yeah.
Practices.
It's just we should check these. We should make sure that we're not being screwed by these countries, basically.
Yeah. I did watch a really short, I mean, it was sort of 30 seconds long video of somebody talking to somebody on the streets in New York about tariffs, and they were going, oh, yeah, it's great. Trump should slap the tariff on. Somebody walked up and said, what business are you in? I'm in T-shirts. And he said, okay, so if your T-shirts go up from $10 to $15, what happens? What are you going to do? This is not even the interviewer. It's just a guy walking by. What are you going to do? He said, well, I would up my price for the consumer. So, okay. So is China paying for this? No. The consumer pays for it. And then the look on his face, he just realizes what he said.
Drops. Scales fall from the eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's just brilliant. And he was saying, and the guy just carries, goes, uh-huh, and just carries on walking. You know, to the interviewer, he's just amazed as well. He's brilliant.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. Yeah. So they're going to look into trade practices.
They're not doing tariffs straight away, but who knows? You know, basically, if he decides to tweet it at some point, then it'll happen, probably.
Yeah.
Is cancelling the electric vehicle mandate.
Which, as featured in.
Yeah. He might have an executive order for, but it's meaningless because there's no such thing.
Right.
He said in his inauguration speech, in fact, after taking the oath of office, that he would, on day one, he was, like today, he would be signing executive orders to repeal the Green New Deal and get rid of the electric vehicle mandate, which, you know, neither of those things exist.
Yeah.
So
that's easy. So, yeah, I did away with those.
The closest thing to an electric vehicle mandate is a goal to reduce tailpipe emissions. And the amount by which they would like to reduce tailpipe emissions would inevitably increase the number of EVs on the road. That's basically
right.
It's a nationwide goal aiming for 50% of new cars and trucks sold by 2030 to be zero emission, which is still, you know, 5 years off, and it's an aim rather than a mandate. Yeah. So he's presumably going to walk that back, which probably doesn't make that much difference because the increase in electric vehicles is popular among both vehicle makers and consumers. Mm.
Yeah.
People want them. People want to sell them.
Yeah.
They've already put an enormous amount of money into developing the technologies.
Yeah.
They're not going to just fucking stop making them.
Because given that, you know, the guy that's been camping out on the lawn in Mar-a-Lago and is now in the suite next door to the White House is known for owning a company that makes the damn things. Yeah. Yeah, and that's the only reason he wants to be in charge of government efficiency so that he can do away with all the kind of those pesky kind of requirements to report failures and deaths when it comes to self-driving electric cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. So that's one of those. So okay, we're going to do away with electric cars. I promise that to whoever is listening. Who's listening? I don't know. Petrochemical donors. Who's listening to that.
Yeah, it's another thing where even if he does nothing at all, which essentially the EOs that he's signing probably do nothing at all. He will both have achieved nothing and achieved the goal that he is claiming he wants to achieve because what he says is we're getting rid of the electric vehicle mandate. You will be able to buy whatever car you want, you know, if it's and that will already be true.
Yeah, yeah.
Because only 50% by 2030 have to be zero emission. They'll still absolutely make all the gas guzzlers. You'll still be able to buy them if you want. They might be a bit more expensive.
Yeah.
But you can buy them.
Well, yeah, particularly if the steel is coming from outside the US and there's a tariff on it. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But that's the thing entirely, isn't it? That he's also going to claim all of the things about that he's been saying about the economy, which have all been untrue, that the, you know, inflation is through the roof, the economy is tanking, it's the worst performing, you know, employment is way up, none of which are true.
Yes, absolutely.
He's now, of course, as soon as he gets into office, he will say, you see, the Dow Jones has gone up, the unemployment's down.
Inflation will suddenly be down to 2.9%, which is exactly where it is right now.
Yeah.
But he's been saying it's nearly 40%. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if we look at the figures, it'll actually be 60.
Yeah.
So he will just claim that, like he did with all the things that Obama put in place, he will claim all of those. It's a bit like when Boris claimed the London Olympics, which had been put in place by the previous mayor.
Yeah.
And people fall for this stuff and fell for it. Yeah.
So Drill, Baby Drill is his next one.
Right.
He's going to...
Oh, this is the other promise to the petrochemical donors.
Yeah. Which is completely meaningless again.
Mm-hmm.
Because the US already is at peak oil production ever. Like they've produced more barrels of oil in the last year than they ever have in US history. And also there's thousands of unused drilling contracts and areas that people are allowed to drill in that they haven't done because it's expensive to start a new drilling thing. And even though there's plenty of areas that are open to drilling and available and have probable oil reserves, they're busy already getting out of the ground in other places.
Yeah. Well, this is exactly how he's set it up. So I'm not going to credit him with the nous to have thought of it. His advisors have said, right, here's the word where they fed him the words to say. So yeah, go riff on this, mm-hmm. And they play into his, it isn't nostalgia. It's Archie Bunker sitting there moaning about how things are better in his day. So they've got him to moan about all this stuff, saying, we used to have such great oil reserves. We haven't, and Biden has made it so that we can't. And the whole thing about we used to have manufacturing, we don't have manufacturing. And I think the manufacturing of cars or something was way up, the highest it's ever been.
It's the highest since pre-COVID in the US.
Right, there you go, yeah. So it's gone way up. So actually there is manufacturing. Yeah. There wasn't under COVID, which coincided with his presidency. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to apply the rubric that he applies, is all of these things that happened during my presidency are my fault. I will take credit for if it's a good thing. So using that rubric, we should then say, okay, so manufacturing has gone up under Biden. The production of oil has peaked under Biden. But, of course, none of that will occur. What he has set up is to depress our expectations, and then he will come in and say, you see what I've done? Look how much more oil is being produced when there's absolutely nothing has happened that he has anything to do with, because it was already doing that. All he's done is depress the perception that it's great.
So, the last couple of things that he has said that he would do are attacking trans rights.
Yes, which he's definitely going to do, because that's easy to do.
Yeah, yeah. And so, first of all, ensuring that he keeps, and I'm quoting him here, keep men out of women's sports.
Mm-hmm.
And also ending gender-affirming care. It's not clear. He hasn't been clear, unsurprisingly, on what he means by that, because a lot of that is based on states, and there's already a fuck ton of states that have made gender-affirming care illegal in many cases. So there wouldn't be a federal protection for that, which there already isn't. So I don't know what I don't know what the fuck he's talking about with that.
Yeah.
Probably he's talking about ending the possibility of you sending your little boy to school and the school never contacting you about it, but sending back your boy who is now a little girl, because he has repeatedly claimed that that's a thing that happens, despite schools not even being able to give you an aspirin without contacting your parents first.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe he's planning on ending that practice,
which
I would say at least would mean he would stop talking about it, but he will claim credit for having ended it, despite the fact it never, ever happened.
Never, yes. Of course.
But he is in the process, if he hasn't already, of signing an executive order to keep sports to one gender, basically.
Right.
And he said in his inaugural address that it is now essentially the stand of the US government that there are two genders, male and female, and that's it. So he's already, within minutes of being inaugurated, was already a massive fucking bigot, which is, unsurprising. We all knew that about him.
Yeah.
But he.
But there it is, written down in full history.
He did it immediately. Yeah.
Wasn't he also going to do similar stuff in the military and kind of walk back those?
I mean, he's made various claims about things like gender affirming care in the military and in prisons and things like that. And walking those back. I don't know if those are included in his plans, but it wouldn't surprise me. He's just apparently in the Capital One Arena signed an executive action to withdraw the United States from the Paris Agreement again.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, that's right. That's great because, you know, it's not like there's currently a massive ecological disaster happening in the US, is it?
Well, I know that's all about bad forest management. They should be raking the leaves.
And diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
That's what's caused
that's what it
California
is. That's what's caused it. Blacks and women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And poor raking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to season two of Trump in the White House. Fucking hell.
Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Well, Trump got sentenced for his 34 felony convictions and continued his 78-year run of facing absolutely no consequences for anything he's ever done because his bought and paid for Supreme Court helped him run out the clock. I'm actually upset that Judge Merchan's options didn't extend to the ability to order a literal slap on the wrist for Trump, because that would have been far more punishment than the unconditional discharge he imposed. To be clear, the reason Trump got away with it is that non-MAGA Americans continue to think that integrity matters and the right thing to do is to allow Trump to begin his second term without a sentence hanging over him, to theoretically be imposed when and if he leaves office in 4 years, which, of course, he would find some way to dodge anyway. Despite getting away scot-free, Trump insisted, "We're going to appeal anyway, just psychologically, because frankly, it's a disgrace." I'm not sure how you appeal psychologically, but I'm sure the calibre of lawyers Trump employs will be able to figure it out. Those lawyers weren't able to prevent Special Counsel Jack Smith from releasing his report on the January 6th case, however. I've no idea why Trump tried so hard to stop it, since none of his followers are going to read it, and those of us who have been paying attention already know almost all of the contents. We did learn that Smith considered charging Trump with incitement to insurrection, but that they hadn't developed, quote, direct evidence, such as an explicit admission or communication with co-conspirators, of Mr. Trump's subjective intent to cause the full scope of the violence that occurred on January 6th. Ultimately, they decided that they already had plenty of other powerful charges that they could prove more easily. We also learned that the various unnamed unindicted co-conspirators mentioned in Trump's indictment were still in danger of being indicted all the way until Trump won the election. Those six, including Giuliani, John Eastman and Sidney Powell, could theoretically still face prosecution, but they won't because gestures broadly at everything. On the plus side, the last 3 years have been great practice for Jack Smith for when he's appointed a special counsel again in 2029 to look into all the new crimes Trump will have committed by then.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, yeah. Before we got the turncoat horror J.D. Trump is America's Hitler Vance as VP, we nearly got Fox business anchor Maria Bartiromo, because she was great with the big donor Wall Street types and she knew how to do TV, Trump told his team, as Politico's Alex Eisenstadt reports in his forthcoming book, Revenge, the inside story of Trump's return to power. You remember Bartiromo. She was one of the most prominent defenders of Trump's false assertions that the 2020 election was stolen from him due to rigged voting machines. Her amplification of these baseless election conspiracy theories eventually resulted in Fox News paying out $787.5 million to settle the defamation lawsuit brought by Dominion Voting Systems. Well, I guess if your favorite reporter on your favorite channel can cost your favorite channel $750 million and Tucker Carlson's job, she can't be all bad. I mean, what could possibly have gone wrong? Trump is such an astute judge of business character, right? Despite her obsequiousness and mailing the softball questions to Trump team ahead of any and all the interviews she held with him, eventually the president-elect's campaign team convinced him to move on, as there was no time to vet Bartiromo.
and they had spent months looking at other candidates. And as incoming White House Communications Director Stephen Chung stated, Vice President-elect Vance was the perfect choice to be President Trump's running mate. And I really don't know what to make of that.
Trump has handed out some pretty weird ambassadorships this time around, putting clinically insane former Senate candidate Herschel Walker in charge of America's relations with the Bahamas, and leaving France to Jared Kushner's tax-evading, witness-tampering, prostitute-hiring to seduce his brother-in-law, filming them having sex and then sending the tape to his sister, Dad, Charles. He also made Kimberly Guilfoyle ambassador to Greece immediately after her relationship with Don Jr. ended, which is probably the nicest thing he's ever done for one of his children. However, the weirdest ambassador announcement so far came out last week when Trump appointed Mel Gibson, John Voight and Sylvester Stallone special ambassadors to Hollywood. He claimed in a Truth Social post that the purpose of this is bringing Hollywood, which has lost much business over the last 4 years to foreign countries, back. Bigger, better, and stronger than ever before. These three very talented people will be my eyes and ears, and I will get done what they suggest. Quite what the fuck this will result in is anybody's guess. I assume there'll be tariffs imposed on Warner Brothers if they don't greenlight a remake of Three Men and a Baby starring Messrs. Voight, Gibson and Stallone as grandpas tasked with looking after a baby who was abandoned by her woke leftist mother, who was forced to carry the baby to term after her attempt to use abortion as birth control was foiled by Trump himself, who will appear in a cameo enforcing the laws of New California, which Republicans recently took back after the first ever fair election, which resulted in 98% of voting-age Democrats being prosecuted for voter fraud. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it.
There is that. Yeah, I think we should pitch it. Yeah, we would spend 8 hours.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Donald Trump Jr. was sent to Greenland. No, don't cheer and whoop and jump for joy just yet. It's not permanent. He came back. It was all part of the thing to convince our God, I don't know, the people to whom Don Sr. promised he'd bring down the price of eggs and bacon, perhaps, I really don't know, to convince someone or other that the Greenlanders themselves were all for having America buy, invade, or annex Greenland because they were all pissed off and underserved and keen to make Greenland greener again or something. And sure enough, several genuine-looking Greenlandic people duly said as much to people pointing cameras at them whilst Don Jr. was making, yeah, you see, gestures. Of course, Charlie Kirk was there, and of course he was absolutely stoked to be in the presence of another useless Trump offspring, and more than happy to be in photos with MAGA hat-wearing Greenlanders, inviting America's Hitler to invade. Only trouble is, the MAGA cohort reportedly rounded up homeless people from the area, including one person from under a bridge, promising them a meal at the Hotel Hans Egede in exchange for their participation in the pro-Trump photo circuit. Despite describing the Greenlandic participants as the local community in Nuuk, several local sources that spoke with Denmark's DR News described the photographed individuals as homeless and socially disadvantaged people who are often outside the supermarket directly across from the hotel where the Trump event was held. I watched Hypernormalization again this week, and the point put forward by Adam Curtis is that the powers that be are supposedly in total control of the way we see things. Part of the problem for Trump is that Denmark and Europe is a bit older and more savvy than Trump and his target audience, and over the millennia have set a lot of store by actual facts rather than stupid wishes. Oh, do you think Don Jr. thought he was going to wear Wicked was shot and that everyone was going to be green and that magic wands work?
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is very, very bad at his job. I know we're supposed to be doing news in this part of the show, and that sure as fuck isn't news to anyone. But even someone as bad at the job as Johnson must understand that with a majority as slim as his, you don't want to piss off any of your own members. So he must have had a pretty good reason for summarily firing Ohio Congressman Mike Turner as head of the House Intelligence Committee. If Johnson does have a good reason for it, he's not saying. When asked his rationale, he said, "It's a new Congress, we just need fresh horses in some of these places, but I'm a Mike Turner fan, he's done a great job." Depending on who you ask, there might be other reasons. Turner says that when Johnson explained his decision, he cited concerns from Mar-a-Lago. But Politico claims that Johnson didn't obsequiously obey Trump. He obsequiously obeyed the hard-right factions of the party who disagree with Turner's support for Ukraine aid and for surveillance powers for intelligence agencies. Either way, while Turner isn't exactly popular within his party, he does have some close allies, and Mike Johnson will need every single Republican vote in order to get any legislation through in the next few months. So it's not a great time to make an enemy. Not that it matters, really. Once the confirmation hearings are done, Johnson will accidentally use a pronoun and get ejected in favour of several months of new speaker election shenanigans.
Yay! In the manner of acting on behalf of some kind of dictator for a day, or a fragile, needy, narcissistic despot, perhaps, incoming senior Trump administration officials have begun questioning career civil servants who work on the White House National Security Council about who they voted for in the 2024 election, and their political contributions, and whether they've made social media posts that could be considered incriminating by President-elect Donald Trump's team. McCarthyite un-American activities, anyone? Trump's pick for National Security Advisor, Florida Representative Mike Waltz, in recent days publicly signals his intention to get rid of all non-political appointees and career intelligence officials serving on the NSC by Inauguration Day to ensure the council is staffed with those who support Trump's agenda. At a stroke, this, of course, will denude the administration of considerable expertise and institutional knowledge. But hey, what the hell? Nobody knows more about the Middle East and Ukraine and Sudan and Yemen and Iran than Trump anyway. And with all those never-Trumpers out the way, there'll be a lot more posts for yes people who A, won't have a clue, and most importantly, B, won't disagree. Just how Uncle Joe Stalin, sorry, Donald J. Trump likes it. White House Security Advisor Jake Sullivan noted when Biden took office in 2021, he inherited most of the NSC staff from the outgoing Trump administration. Those folks were awesome, Sullivan said. They were really good. Which just makes me go, huh? Are these the people Trump now wants to get rid of? I guess we all see where Trump's coming from, though, because during his first term, two career military officers detailed to the NSC raised their concerns about Trump's 2019 call to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in which the president sought an investigation of Biden and his son Hunter, which, as we know, led to Trump's first impeachment. Remind me again, is it three impeaches and you're out?
One of the fun things about being right-wing, I imagine, is finding new things to be outraged about. Tiny-faced idiot Charlie Kirk used to just wait for more important outrage manufacturers like Tucker Carlson to tell him what to be upset about, and would then wring his hands over the lack of clear genitalia on a Mr. Potato Head or the toned-down sexual appeal of the M&M mascots until the well ran dry. With Tucker now downgraded from a primetime Fox News host to a cut-rate Dr. Jacoby on Twitter, massive-headed community college dropout Kirk needs to make up his own reasons to cry, and he's not very good at it. His latest, nestled among various conspiracy theories about the California wildfires, is that ASL interpreters make it hard for him to concentrate. On his eponymously titled show, he said, "Can we please just go away with half the screen during these emergency briefings to the sign language interpreters? I have nothing against, obviously, people that cannot hear, but there's closed captioning. I mean, this is just over the top. We can't do this. We got to get back to how it used to be. It's just too much of a distraction is what it is. The reason is they do these emergency briefings for fires or terrorist attacks, and you're looking at this and you're not listening. I don't like it." Yeah, fuck deaf people. I find it slightly harder to pay attention to what people are saying, so you should be made to rely on the error-prone live captioning keeping up with everything that's being said, and miss out on the emphasis, tone, and emotion that can't be conveyed in text, but is integral to ASL. Yeah, let's make America great again by getting rid of this woke attempt to pander to a tiny proportion of Americans just because it's required by the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, which was signed by radical leftist George H.W. Bush. And no, Charlie, closed captioning isn't enough, because aside from all the stuff I've already mentioned, some people don't speak English. And ASL is not just a flappy arm version of English, but its own unique language, which is understood by 500,000 Americans. You can't see me right now, but I'm signing something extremely rude about Charlie Kirk that even the explicit tag on Apple Podcasts wouldn't cover.
Yeah, yeah. And it's understood by at least 500,000 Americans, yeah. Meanwhile, this side of the pond, in amongst the usual batshittery that is British politics outside of the Labour Party, inside the Labour Party, Treasury Minister Tulip Siddiqui resigned because of possible links to her aunt, who was ousted last year as Bangladesh's Prime Minister. While Standards adviser Sir Laurie Magnus, to whom Tulip referred herself, said he had not identified evidence of improprieties, but said it was regrettable that Siddiqui had not been more alert to the potential reputational risks of the ties of her aunt. Which, to my ears, resignation thus sounds quite a noble thing to have done, considering the size of the distance from actual wrongdoing. Meanwhile, of course, those very much closer to actual wrongdoing, Boris and Truss, are flogging volumes of bound toilet paper in the form of biographies. I genuinely got a roll of Boris toilet paper for Christmas, and it's been such a joy to use. And the Tory party and the Reform party are continuing to have a go at Rachel Reeves' fiscal feasibility as Chancellor. She's at fault as the pound apparently slumps a bit more against the dollar, which is probably more to do with market anticipation of trammels being undone by Trump than anything Reeves is doing, and the cost of borrowing by the government remaining high. Probably more to do with Liz Truss than with anything Reeves is doing to fill the hole left by said lettuce. Even the Independent newspaper reported that more millionaires than ever are leaving Britain under this government than before, which is not really a problem, seeing as they're the ones that did all they could to not pay tax in the UK anyway by registering their businesses offshore. The actual problem is that millionaires like Sunak and Farage remain in the UK, especially since the latter promised that he would leave if Brexit failed, and yet somehow is the only one still touting that he's been a success, and we should all move on. Well, yeah, after you, Nige, after you.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know, and if you've had a good time, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patron, Lisa O'Lisa Pui All Up. Our straw man level patrons, Mike Smith, LT, Colleen Laiela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M. Scott, Aussie on Bank, Laura Tomsik, Mark Reiki, and Amber I. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we can just call her Amber. Last year at QED, I met the listener, recognised her at QED the year before, because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Schmutz, Sharon Robinson, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Guetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much, and welcome, Lisa O'Lisa. And thank you for your continued support. It's very much appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people, as well as us and other listeners, in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump, or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until the next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the new Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.